Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today I'm here with the wonderful B. Zelda.
Hello, hello.
Hi. For those who don't know, I played with B and Shadowrun for season one, Spring of the Fireflies. But if you don't know B, which is really weird, you should. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh gosh, I'm always terrible at like real intros because I just want to be like, hello, I'm B. I exist, but I guess I exist in a variety of spaces and time, and you can probably listen to my voice as a podcast form if you have been listening to the Broadswords, 12-Sided Stories, Power Play, oh gosh, Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast. I'm a TTRPG streamer as well, so like I've done a bunch of things with the Streampunks, D&D Beyond, gosh.
So many things.
Honestly, insert like cool thing, and I've probably done it at least once, which is amazing. And I'm just really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, that's honestly, yes. I like also have been in so many things. It's mind blowing. And now like
can't keep track.
Yeah, now that I'm in not as many things because I purposely cut down, I'm just like, oh, is that it? Is that right? All I'm in this week? That's confusing.
You look at your calendar and it's like one tabletop game? No, that can't be right. No,
that's never what it says, but it's like it's like only five?
Really? Oh, okay, only, instead it of the regular 12.
It pretty close, honestly.
Oof.
Yeah, it's like only five? What's happening?
Oh, dang.
But we do have a topic today that we may stay on, who knows, but we're here to talk about non-binary and QTPOC representation in TTRPGs, which B is a perfect representation of that. Obviously, I am not non-binary and I am white, so I don't know how I have a say in what any of this is, but we're going to talk about it and touch base on some other stuff as well in the tabletop community and just probably talk about tabletops. We may have already been talking for like an hour before this.
About tabletops too, but we will continue because there's an endless amount of things to say. And yes. I think that a lot of it needs to be said, not every ounce of it. There's a lot of D&D discourse that I don't think needs to exist because I don't want to know that your shield's cooler than my shield. Don't really care about that.
My shield's the best because it's a rainbow, okay?
See, that I'm into. If you want to talk to me about the design, any like personalized insignias, here for that. I'm not a stats person. I don't play my tabletops for the mechanics. So we're gonna travel back in time to, I don't know, 2017, give or take. And that's around when I got into podcasting. Just started off with the Broadswords on a whim. The people I was with and I decided to reach out to like the McElroy brothers to be like, hey, do you want to be on our baby podcast? One of them said yes. Travis joined. And nice. It was a really amazing opportunity. But then within the show that I was doing, not only was I the only person of color, it was at the time we'd considered ourselves, it was like an all-women D&D actual play podcast. And then as I used tabletops to kind of figure out some more gender things, as like a small caveat, nothing is cooler than being able to play people of a different gender expression than you are naturally used to because it is a fantastic way to kind of just test it out, you know, free of charge. It's a really, really great method. And I took advantage of that. So as the show, you know, this amazing podcast I did kind of grew and grew, we kept bringing in guests, but they were all white men, white women. Mm-hmm. And I would say 85%, you know, there's 5% that I don't know, were probably straight. And, you know, like, fine, live your best. But it became one of these things where I was like, this cannot be the norm. I'm playing with people on the internet. I'm playing D&D on the internet with strangers, you know, acquaintances, friends. Why are they all still the same people? Like, it's not like I'm limited to a city where, you know, nobody else looks like me. So I started to explore some options. I wanted to figure out what else is there. And then when you looked online, when you listened to other shows, like other actual play podcasts, it was a lot of just like a group of men, like cis white men sitting around a table, but it's fun because they're friends. And like, again, I don't want to take away from that, but there has to be more. So fast forward like 2-3 years, pandemic hits. We're all like, well, shit, now we have to spend extra time indoors, I guess, on the internet. And for me personally, that was like the first time I started to see this blossoming of the conversation where other people started to realize how undiverse these tables were. Mm-hmm. And it became almost like a standard within tabletop hiring to, you know, you have like a checklist. You're going to get like, you got your one bro, you got your one gal, you're going to get your one POC, and then maybe you can find a gay. And like, golden, that was like the standard. I guess it was progress, you know? Progress yeah. isn't always linear, and it's like a weird lateral movement. But there was something. And it has just been a hecking journey to have to be the one to advocate, to not have to always be the token one in a space, because I unfortunately cover a lot of those like diversity checkboxes. I hate it so much. Like, I love my own identity, but I hate that when I'm truly filling out a Google Doc form for when I want to join a stream, and it's like, how do you identify? And it'll give you like four choices for sexuality. I'm queer, and it'll give you like eight choices for gender, and I identify as trans non-binary. And then it's like, ooh, what else do you got? Are you racially ambiguous? It's like, sure. And so I every time, like, I can check every single one of those boxes, and I feel like deep down, I only get hired because I fit their diversity quota.
I know. Well, I will say, you are also a fantastic role player and storyteller. So I think it's more than just that.
That's what I really hope. Because, you know, there's always that voice, that imposter syndrome voice. Mm-hmm. And that's like the flavor that mine takes. It's just like, nobody actually wants you to play these games with them. They're just like, you check off these boxes. Therefore, you know, that's because so many times that has been the case. And not, I shouldn't say so many. There have been a few very distinct moments where it was very clear afterwards that that's why I was there, or if it wasn't intentional, still having to be the only one of any of those boxes at a table is just cold, you know. It's just a little cold for me sometimes.
Yeah, I know with Chaotic Wonderful, the thing we tried to do was we tried to balance it where there's like five players, usually 4 to 5 players. We always tried to have at least 2 to 3 of the players be BIPOC. We
had a difference.
Almost all of our peep cast was gay, but that was just because that's how
it worked. Delightful coincidence, yes.
And then we also always made sure that there be at least 2 people that either had mental illness or chronic illness of some sort, because that's a big part for me is I have chronic illness. I'm demisexual. I'm female, but and identify as she, her. So I don't have that one, and I'm white, obviously. But I also have neurodivergency because I have ADHD, and I have mental health issues, and I'm very open about all those things. So I was like, okay, I want to make this as safe of an environment as I possibly can without pinpointing. And whenever I invited someone new to the show, I always have a conversation with them first. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll be like, hey, I would love to talk to you. Can we have like a 20-minute chat about like what you want and like make sure we get along and like all that stuff, because that will tell me way more about them than a paper will ever tell me.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. Just even trying to get to feel the vibe of somebody else, like that will kind of set the tone for what your game will look like as soon as they join this group. And even that fact that you have that separate conversation, that's only something I've seen maybe the past year that like game runners and GMs have been doing, where instead of just kind of getting tossed into a group, you know, with a variety of other strangers that I have no idea who these are. One of those people might be somebody I have a really, really negative history with, and that may make me feel unsafe. Like, you never know. So I really, really appreciate it when there's somebody that can take 5-10 minutes, talk to me personally, be like, here's what I would like. Here are the people that are going to be involved. Do you feel comfortable with this? Because you never hecking know. And I just wish, you know, other folks would take the time to just stop, breathe, take a look at the situation and be like, okay, maybe there's room to improve this so I don't feel like I'm moving pawns around, you know, just to fit your moves.
And it was interesting to explore that. And then even with trying to keep that balance, there we did run into hiccups still. And I learned from those hiccups. Like, there was one event, it had 3 people of color originally. And that was actually a requirement for some of the BIPOC members who signed up. They specifically stated, mm-hmm. I would like a minimum of 3 people on the cast that are BIPOC. And that's valid, and I was trying to do that either way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I could only get 2 because like that's all who was available.
Yeah,
but if there wasn't enough, I wouldn't do the show.
Thank you.
The one time that we did it was because we had already had, we did have a diverse cast. Mm-hmm. And last minute, one person didn't show up and one person got sick. And both were BIPOC members.
Totally out of your control, yeah.
And I got a replacement, one replacement person who was BIPOC, and I very last minute, and the other replacement was white. And someone did say, like, hey, I was a little uncomfortable with that because you agreed that da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, I tried. I really tried. I'm sorry. I will keep that in mind. But that's when it was brought up, like, you should have offered perhaps in the future, like, do you want to cancel the game since we...
Yes.
And that's a hard one for me because, especially last minute, because I'm not diagnosed with autism, but one of the things that I have that is a very well-known autistic trait is when things get canceled last minute, I get very agitated. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be the one that cancels things, even though it's like for a good reason. So it's just like, it's really hard for me to be like, I can't make it today, or like, we should cancel this.
Because yeah. Maybe like another alternative in that situation could be, even if you wanted to reach out to the BIPOC player and be like, hey, this is who is going to be joining very last minute. I want to run it by you because unfortunately, you know, you're going to be the only person of color at this table for this game only, you know, X, Y, Z out of my control. How do you feel?
Because that's what we decided to do going forward. And I was like, okay, that makes sense.
9 times out of 10, they will want to keep playing. It's just getting that little bit of heads up so you don't have that icky feeling as soon as they get, like, you sit down at the proverbial digital table and you're like, oh,
you
were
told we're diverse and then suddenly it's not. You're like, I'm sorry, this wasn't the intent. But like, you have to, it's very much perception versus intention is like, that's the big thing I learned at my old company was like, sure, your intention may have been good, but you were perceived doing this. Therefore, this is what reality is. And I'm like,
exactly. And that's something I hate to say, but I think everybody kind of has to learn the hard way. Like, you have to go through a situation where you're faced with that and it sucks. Nobody wants to fail. Nobody wants to do anything where somebody can be hurt, even, you know, emotionally. But sometimes you have to make the wrong move, own up, take responsibility, apologize, and then grow. I'm a very, very big proponent of if you need to do something and you're afraid of it, do it. You're going to fail anyways, but fail and do better.
Yeah.
That's how I kind of want to lead life. And that's a lot of my things when it comes to, again, so like we're going to go back to like diversity and inclusion at the gaming table. You got a lot of excuses. I wish I could be brave enough to ask my GMs or the game runner to be like, I would like to set a standard of at least 2 other people of color at the table with me so I don't feel isolated or alone. My standard is just 1 and I wish I could make it 2. But the few times I try to raise my bar, the pushback I get is, I'm trying to be diplomatic here. It's gross. You know, it's a lot of the time it's people you trust. It's people that I've respected and they don't push back because they're trying to be visible assholes. They're only pushing back because they only see the situation through their lens, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, I don't know that many people of color. Oh, this is just a table of only my, like the critical role argument. Like, oh, it's just a table of friends. Like, nah, they're professionals. And, you know, I see that argument a lot in a little bit of the tabletop space and it's not valid. Like there's so many people that are playing this, like playing games online right now. There's no shortage of queer, trans people of color, just left and right. You just have to be a kind, considerate, decent human being and reach out. But that's a high bar.
Yeah, I'm kind of 50-50 on the critical role thing because like, yes, I agree. They are professionals now. So they need to try. However, if you start a business with your friends, you are still starting a business with your friends. And it's like, mm-hmm. What I feel like some people are wanting is like to have them kick out somebody that's at the table. Not everybody, but some people are like, get rid of X person and replace them with somebody else.
Which would change the dynamic entirely.
Right. And it's like, well, yes, that's valid. And they need diversity at their table, which it seems like I haven't been watching them lately. It seems they have been trying with their guests. At least
from what I've heard, I don't consume that content. I'll just, you know, kind of follow the hashtags and things.
Yeah. Like from what I've seen on their guests, a lot of the guests are now BIPOC members.
Awesome.
So they seem to be trying and they do have once a month where they do a non-crit role game.
Mm-hmm. Like they do with Exandria, I think, and Abrea ran that, which was awesome.
So they're trying what they can. I don't think personally that they should have to completely disconnect their friendship, which building a business together, especially as friends, is hard enough, but having mm-hmm. that trust that you have with them, just throwing somebody in there to feels like it would be a token at
and
that
that's
point.
So real. And I hate that I agree because this is like, I've had this argument online before. I don't care. Like, Critical Role is such a unique financial giant. We're never going to see anything like that again. I mean, Dimension 20 is getting there-ish, but honestly, it's still apples and oranges. So, like, I almost want to tell people that I can't even equate Critical Role to anything that we're doing in this tabletop space because they are the sun and we're just like a spark on a sparkler. So we can do better, but their money. I can't hold money to any kind of moral standard of any kind, you know?
Yeah, I've always been devil's advocate. So I try to see both sides of it, even if I know that one side's not necessarily right or wrong, which gets me in trouble sometimes.
Oh, so a lot of the time the devil's advocate, when the side is wrong, it's wrong for like some deeply historical reasons. And it's like, you could look at it, but maybe don't vocalize it.
Yeah, that's definitely a major thing. I do that not with, like, obviously not just with tabletop stuff, but like just in general. Like, my kid will come home, for example, and they'll say something like, oh, so-and-so said X to me at mm-hmm. work today. And I'm like, well, what's the context around the situation? Because that could be taken in multiple ways. Like, how did they say it? What was the situation? Like, yes. Were they having a bad day? Like, I need more information to make. They're like, well,
that's
what do you think they meant?
Though, like, you're trying to humanize the situation. I don't think that's an incorrect thing. That sounds empathetic.
I try, but like, I get just agree with me that they're bad. I'm like, I can't do that.
Situationally, there's this thing I like to do with a couple of my friends that our relationships and friendships are online, so we've never met in person to build certain habits. But there's one thing that I'll always do, and it's if I want to vent and I know that contextually, maybe I was wrong, I will reach out and I'll be like, hey, I really need to vent. I don't really want any advice. I don't want a resolution. I just want to tell you how much of an asshole this person was and how much I hate their guts. And I just need you to agree. Do you have the time for that? And like, then we're all on the same page. And I love that because like, you know, they'll be able to get in on it with me and they don't feel like, okay, well, clearly be... that wouldn't have been a problem had you just done this or that. Like, no. I just want you to tell me I was right and we hate this person together. Thank you.
Right the second. Tomorrow we can have another conversation.
Yes, about the actual resolution. Let's talk about the context. Let's grow from it, you know? But in this moment, I want to vent and be petty.
So when I said I hate cancellations, I get very angry. And I stopped showing it. Because I realized I was accidentally hurting people and I didn't mean to.
Yeah.
But I would get very, very upset when something got canceled. And it didn't mean I didn't care. Mm-mm. Because like, I still, like, I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that you don't feel good. I hope your migraine gets better. Like, I hope you feel better. Like, I want them to be okay.
It's just how you processed your feelings with like, it's how you process that very specific situation.
Right. So like,
anger.
Exactly. Like, immediate just like irritation. So like, there were times where I would vent about it. And I'd be like, I understand why it got canceled and I hope that they feel better, but I'm very annoyed. And it's the butt thing that's like, it was pointed out, like, that's not the greatest way to word that. And I was like, I know. And I'm not saying that I want them to, like, I'm not putting a butt in it in that sense. I'm processing still that I am annoyed about the situation, even though I understand completely and want them to feel better, and I'm not upset with them. I'm upset that my schedule got fucked up.
Yes.
That's what I'm upset with right now.
It's such a hard one, though.
Get it.
Like, your feelings are valid as heck. You, even if you still wanted to feel rage, like, nobody should be able to take that away from you. However, even socially, I don't feel like navigating that, somebody's always going to feel icky out of it, despite the fact that, you know, their cancellation for whatever reason is valid. Your feelings about now your whole day is kind of out of whack is valid. How do we both come together and be like, this sucks together. Instead, you kind of have to do the placating, you know?
Yeah.
I'm so torn with that.
I have learned that there is a point eventually where I need to like just stop playing mm-hmm. with that person. And this has happened to multiple people. I've canceled incomplete campaigns before they even aired because I'm just like, we recorded 3 sessions and then started over and we recorded 3 more sessions. But out of 17 sessions, we only played 6 times.
What?
And out of those 11, like 63% were canceled within 24 hours
of
the game. So like, I
was a waste of time.
So every single week, I was just like determined that it was going to get canceled. I just assumed it was going to get canceled because that helped me not get as angry if I just assumed it was going to be canceled. But that's not a place I should be in.
Mm-mm.
So I finally just said, I'm done. Like, I'm done. I'm not going to fight this anymore. Clearly, I am the only person, like, not the only person, but like, clearly, most of the people here do not give a shit about this mm-hmm. show. Because you are not taking the time and energy to put towards it. And if that's the case, I'm gonna help you and I'm just gonna cancel it. So you don't have to be a bad guy.
That's like, fair. That's hard to reconcile sometimes, you know, like coming, like having to not only tell people, like clearly you don't care, like your actions have more than shown that you're not willing to show up, but like, ooh, that's a hard one. Like, that would be a hard pill for me to swallow because I'm trying to picture myself in the situation on the opposite side. Because I guess if I didn't commit to it and I'm not showing up, no, then yeah, you absolutely don't care. And if somebody told me that, I guess that would be an out. How was the wrapping up of this? Like, did it go peacefully?
I think some of them were just glad it was over.
Yeah, that's too bad.
They, like, I was so excited for the story, too. Like, I bought art already for everybody. Like, no. I was just so excited.
Oh, gosh.
But it was frustrating. And then, like, in another game, I vouched for a player, and I said, yeah, this person's really fun to play with. And then they missed, like, half of the game's first stream. Ooh. And
that reflects on you?
Right. And I'm like, I literally was like, hey, we have a game. Where you at? And mm-hmm. so there's been when there's like particular people now that like, while I might like them as a person, I will not play with them anymore because I know that in their life, this is not a priority for them. Mm-hmm. And that's completely valid. Tabletops shouldn't probably be the priority for most people. But
don't talk to me about that.
I said shouldn't. I didn't say yeah. But I guess it's more some people treat it as a hobby and some people treat it as a job.
Yes.
And my
we have learned those who treat it like a job and those who treat it like a hobby.
Yes. And some people who treat it like a hobby will respect those who treat it like a job, especially if it's their baby. So like I've worked with people who don't see it as a job, who see it as a hobby, but they respect my time and my energy and they will show up and do the things and make a great show. And then there's people who just are like, everything else is more important than this, including your feelings. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, cool. So can we wrap this story up so I can move on with my life, please? Like,
I think this is kind of one of the reasons that I really, really enjoyed session zeros in games. You had mentioned kind of earlier when you're trying to cast for a show, you'll kind of have that one-on-one with somebody to get the vibe. Mm-hmm. We talked about like, yeah, give them a heads up. Who's going to be in the game? So once you've got like your party gathered and you're all on a voice call, a video call, whatever it is, you're in person, session zero to talk about your expectations, story-wise and individually. There's been more times than I expected where we're talking about our expectations for the game. And I realize these people are sitting at a table with me to play something entirely different than I thought we were doing. And yeah, you have to say something. I'm not about to run people through like a 3-hour waste of time because they all wanted like a medieval, I don't know what's a Camelot game. And I just wanted to play My Little Pony. And this is a nice light, you know, comparison. Usually the differences of opinions are some of the content of the game.
Yeah.
And that's also why like Lines and Veils is essential You talk about the content you do not want in this game. You talk about the things that, you know what, it might cut out, it might come up. If it does, we'll just fade to black.
Yep.
I love gore. Love it. Love it with all my heart and soul. I would say 75% of people I play games with don't like that. And that's fine. So, like, you know, I adjust accordingly. And I wish that we could take that mantra and apply it to the other areas where if you have these conflicting personalities, like you've had, where it's just people aren't taking the thing seriously, in whatever aspect, that could be addressed right at the beginning. Like, I'm so sorry you had to go through so many recordings for nothing to air. Like, that physically hurts my heart for you.
Yeah, like, I recorded 3 shows that haven't aired. One, we scrapped the first 2, so we had 3 episodes, and I just scrapped it all. Mm-hmm. I didn't lose that much. It was mostly the energy and time of 17 months of planning it and, like, trying to get it recorded that was the waste. Another one took forever to record, but we did get the full 16 episodes, and we got the full story out.
Awesome.
But near the end, I was literally like, if we don't record this month, I'm done. Like, I am done. I cannot do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, then we won't get a story. I'm like, I don't care. I am so done. And we recorded.
A lot of responsibility needs to be shared. Like, your players got to take some of that, too.
It's like, you guys are amazing to play with. This game is fantastic. I would love to have the story finale, but it has been 3 months and I am done. Like, if we cancel one more time, I can't.
Dang, Randa. I guess, like, I might have played more games, I think, with people who take this more as a job than a hobby. When I think of, like, the hobby players, it's often when I'm doing a charity stream or a fundraiser or something, and it's just off the rails. If people even show up on time, we've got people joining in, like, the middle of the game. Nobody really knows the rules. Me. You know, we're all just kind of doing our best. But
I still remember with Shadowrun, you're just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
I refuse to learn the rules for that game. I cannot tell you why. It made me physically mad, those rules. Like, I just... Oh, character creation was frustrating. Every time we leveled up, I click things. I said random stuff most of the time.
I think I remember I was like, here, let me just tell you what you should upgrade.
Yes! One day before a game, you just, like, walked me through. Like, should be, like, maybe this number. We're going to put that up there. Okay, drop that. That doesn't even make sense. Yeah, I don't like games where it's too mechanical. You know, I play a lot of my games for good storytelling, and that reflects on all the streams and the podcasting that I do. And that's what's important for me. And I set those expectations. I know that you also have a similar play style. And that's what I love, because we've not only played together, I know I know how the two of us can mesh well. And with that energy, we're able to create something because we're always on the same page. And, like, that, apply that to heckin' everything.
I love the role play aspect of it. I do enjoy mechanic aspects because it gives,
like, a foundation for the story to tell.
Yes, a foundation and, like, a way to kind of control so everybody is, like, on the same page. Because I get worried, because I hate overpowered players so much, like, I get worried that if we don't have that level of mechanical foundation, even if we don't follow the rules precisely, it'll be twisted to something where somebody becomes too powerful or it's taken too far. And I've heard so many stories of people who are like, oh yeah, I did this crazy thing, and they explain it, and I'm just like, that's like the rule of cool times, like the rule of ridiculously stupid. I don't even know where we're at with this level anymore. Like, the rule of cool is fine. I get that. I think it should exist, and, like, make it what you want, but, like, there
with
are
a reason.
Rules for a reason.
Absolutely.
To give you a general concept to follow.
No, and I like to adhere to that. I'm pretty rule of cool, but, like, I want it to make sense within the story that we're telling. You know, I don't want it to be this outrageous, ridiculously overpowered, like, spirit bomb. And I also like power gamers. Time and place. I love a good power game. Like, my little
Everybody's
brother,
on the same
bless
page.
His soul. Yes. My offline for fun games. You know what? Go heckin' wild with your character. We'll do level 20. You know, get all the spells you want. I don't care how OP they are. But if it's something where we are performing, I think there needs to be a level of collaboration. And as soon as you lose that, then it's no longer... We're not really performing anymore. We're just kind of doing our own thing, and we happen to be recording. And The times that I run into that, I have no idea how to tell them. Not a clue. I don't know how to approach that.
My issue with home games lately, which I haven't been in one for a bit, but the issue I've had with people who aren't actual streamers or like podcasters or people that I've played with online, there's a different energy. And in my home games, there's so much crosstalk.
Yes.
It drives me crazy. Like I love that we can talk. And I think like the first 15, 20 minutes of us being there, we should talk. We should catch up. That's what we're here for. We're here to have fun. But once the game starts, can we play the game?
Mm-hmm.
And like it used to bug me a lot when the DM is literally describing something that's tragic, that's like affecting a character. Like there was a scene for Cthulhu Mythos D&D 5e game where my mm-hmm. character, who's a sorceress of Yogg-Sothoth, she is the granddaughter of Yogg-Sothoth. And her father, Wilbur Whatley, is like, he kidnapped her.
Okay.
And was like, you have the choice to agree to take the power and join me with helping try to release your grandfather, or you can fight me and I'm just going to take your power anyway. Okay. But he also gave her the option of like, or I can let you go and you'll forget I exist.
Cool.
But the problem with that last one was if she let him go, she wouldn't know where he was, which means she couldn't stop him from releasing Yogg-Sothoth, which is a terrible, terrible thing on the world. And this entire time this conversation is happening, everybody else is just talking.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and that kills the entire vibe.
And I'm like, are you even paying attention to the story that's happening right this second? Like, no, you're not. You didn't pay attention when my character agreed. Like, yes, sure, you don't know what this out of character, but out of character, it's an interesting story. So like in character, they don't know, hey, my character died that night because she agreed to join him in order to keep tabs on her father and not lose that connection, but also to get magic in reality. Because okay. if she has magic in reality, perhaps one day she could be strong enough to fight her father. Probably not, but that's her logic. And I had to roll 5 death saves. And oh, wow. I failed. Nice. And I woke up in my room with no memory of what happened. My party was looking for me all night, evidently, mm-hmm. trying to find where my character was. And I'm like, I've been sleeping here the entire time. What are you talking about? But suddenly my character has like, because it's Cthulhu, has like a madness of sorts and is like twitching uh-huh. a little bit, is acting a little strange, a little hyperactive. She was a very big vegan person, like super big on eating healthy and being vegan and like environmental. She's like, I want ice cream. Ice cream sounds really good right now. Do you want ice cream? I think ice cream sounds fantastic. We can get ice cream. It's 8 a.m. Is it though? Like, where have you been all night? Right here. My phone's fully charged. So clearly I've been here all night. Like, I don't know. And then at some point they went to the mall for her to get ice cream, which she ordered 32 scoops of ice cream, none of which were vegan. Just a gigantic ass tray.
Stacked. Okay. I was hoping it was all stacked on top of each other.
That would have been hilarious. So as she's eating, so one of the things with the Yogg-Sothoth sorcerer is they get a proboscis, which is like a little creature that pops out of your belly button, and it has like it's like a Venus flytrap.
Okay, cool.
It was real weird, but it had teeth and it liked to eat. So as soon as it smelled food, it was like, I want some. And now because she has magic, it can come out in reality, and she hears this gurgling in her stomach and feels this happening. She's like, oh no, oh no. Quickly grabs her ice cream and runs to the bathroom, which just makes it look weirder.
Yeah. Please don't eat ice cream in the bathroom, everybody else.
Listen. Proboscis pops out, makes a giant ass mess. The one woman in the team comes in, peeks under the stall, sees everything. And I'm like, you can't say anything. You cannot say anything. Just say I'm on my period. Say I'm on my period.
Really dramatic. Yeah, no belly monster. No biggest
it's like, but you have, why is that here? I don't know. I don't know. But don't tell anybody. And then 20 minutes later, she starts to tell somebody. And my character freaks out and tries to silence her with magic.
Did it work? Were you successful?
It was successful in the fact of a spell cast, but they succeeded their save. But the second time she tried to cast magic, which was a produce flame to burn the ropes that she was bound in, a giant hole opened up under her because evidently there's a 50% chance your magic's not going to work and something bad will happen instead. My favorite. At one point, she her hand was just a skeleton hand. Like 20 minutes, she just had a skeletal hand. She's just staring at it what the fuck?
I'm so tempted to make clacky music. I don't know how successful. I'm just
why do I can still feel it. And that's how they caught her, because she got so distracted by her skeletal hand. She just was standing still.
Any character I play, I think I would fall to that. It's just, there's some things about my about me as B that I always infuse in my characters. Yeah. Easily distracted. You just said skeleton hands, and now I'm thinking about I can make music with my skeleton hands. I could run a stick along it, like a xylophone, but with bones.
Yeah.
The options are unlimited.
Hello. Sorry for the interruption here, but I wanted to give you an advertisement for one of our friends in the tabletop community. Please give it a listen and go check them out.
Well, hello there, young adventurer. I've been waiting for you. We've met before, don't you remember? Ah, no worries. I'm quite forgetful myself. The other Sparks are waiting for you. Avaith, Shui, Theo, and Brandy. They've had such wonderful tales to tell. A truly marvelous story. I wonder which one of them will be the chosen one. Perhaps none of them will. Perhaps it will be you. The morning's coming soon. I have to leave now. Will I see you again? I sure hope so. Is a story really a story if there's no one to tell it to? Well, goodbye for now, adventurer.
Chosen Ones is a visual novel-style D&D podcast on YouTube that releases every Thursday at 1 p.m. CST. Find us on Twitter at Chosen Ones D&D. Come adventure with us.
And now, back to the show.
Ironically, actually, on the 9th of last month, which is the day we're recording this, but the episode that went out was about character bleed.
Ooh, yeah.
And because I'm terrible at it. I am so bad with it. I have so much character bleed, and I have so much of me in my characters. It's a problem.
I had a feeling. Again, we've only played one. It was a campaign together, so I got a really good vibe. Well, I didn't get a great vibe of you as Nikki. I knew you as Paladin, and then we'd have the 20 minutes before and 10 minutes after. But I'm gonna say, even during this now hour and a half almost chat, I could see snippets of you and how you put them into your characters. So is your bleed intentional, or do you how do you feel about that?
It wasn't originally. I didn't some of it was some of it was intentional. I have a Vampire the Masquerade character named Abby who is very much me. I'm currently dealing with my through therapy, locking away my emotions and learning how to undo that bad habit that I've had for a while. And that's something I'm working on. Abby survives by locking away her emotions from childhood trauma, which is the same exact reason. Different childhood traumas. So it's totally different, but it's not. but she'll have random panic attacks, which I'll have random panic attacks, especially when certain triggers. She was very much I need to do good or else people won't respect me. And there's a lot of little things. And then with my other character, Renee, she is demisexual. So then for her, her sexuality experience is kind of what my sexuality experience has been.
Yep.
Or at least leaning towards it. But also she has that gifted child syndrome thing too.
Yes.
Where she's super egotistical about one thing that she does. And that's the thing that she's known for. But then there's things that people pointed out. Similarities that I didn't notice, or I pointed out, I'm oh, that's weird. I play a lot of power hungry people for some reason. I don't know why. And then we start talking about it, and I'm damn it. Now I know why. Damn it.
What did I say at the beginning of this when I was talking about using your characters. For me, it's often been a way to work through some of my transness. Mm-hmm. I've streamed quite a few shows where I've played masculine, like men as characters, and try and navigate what that would feel like on me as I play this character. I'm like, Call of Cthulhu, you know? Like, and I unfortunately tend to play a lot of these like macho, a little skeezy, but easily brushed off kind of characters. I don't know, that's not like the best way to put it. What would be a great comparison? Like, did you ever watch Avatar, The Last Airbender?
Yes.
Sokka, kind of, you know, like he tries to exude this toxic masculinity. And it is still, it's there, it's present, but through his, you know, surroundings and family, he's able to kind of work on it. But he still tries to like hit on all these girls and it doesn't always go well. Love it. Love it. I love that so much. But that entire character genre, which I've played across a lot of my mask characters, I've never, ever, ever pulled into any of my non-binary or femme characters. So it's this interesting way to figure out like what's kind of me? What am I even working through? Like when you get people that tell you like, oh yeah, you often play, I like to play when they're femme characters, I always go towards the silly, the giggly, the bubbly, because that's a bit of a safety net for me as B in real life. Mm-hmm. If ever I feel like I'm in an unsafe situation, you just kind of code switch to something that's like super high pitched and really friendly and nobody will ever be mad at me. And like doing that in my characters makes me really reevaluate how that has actually been useful in my life. So and that's all like a version of Bleed. And I really, really love utilizing tabletops to navigate some of that.
Yeah, it's only becomes a problem when it starts to actually affect your real life.
Yes.
Like in a negative way.
Or the people, so, like, they don't have to bear your trauma, like your real life trauma.
Right. So like there's been times where like I've had to step away from a story for temporarily, not for a long period of time, but just like to take a breath to calm down, to like have that not affect me, or because I realized I was getting too close to the situation. Sometimes it was ironically like the same thing happening to me in real life was happening in character. So like I had a character start a relationship at about the same time I had started a relationship.
Huh.
And it was just coincidental that it happened, but because I was feeling those actual feelings that my character was feeling in real life, it bled a little bit. Because mm-hmm. I was like, I know what this feels like. I know exactly what this feels like. I just felt it.
Yes. Oh, dang.
But I'm trying going forward to play characters that are not my stereotypical characters, because I do play a lot of my go-to is a power-hungry lesbian, honestly.
I was gonna say, like, you've got like the buff, butch, competent, take no shit. That's
or the take no shit goth, super powerful, but through magic and intelligence is the other option. But it's still super powerful. Or I played a charismatic character currently in a mask game who is also a power-hungry person, but in the sense of influence and needing of attention and wanting to have the power of her audience and their approval, because that means she'll be more powerful if she has more people supporting her.
Okay.
So it's like, but it was always some sort of power, mm-hmm. not necessarily like strength or magical power. But that mask character also is playing down this rabbit hole of she thought she was losing her powers, superpowers. And she went to an illegal place to buy, found out that, hey, you can just buy superhero powers. It's real expensive, but you could just buy superhero powers. Got caught just taking this random holographic syringe of whatever.
Oh gosh.
And gained regeneration.
Nice.
Because it That's basically not a the bad drug. Deal. It's not. The drug gives you what you need most. So the superpower you need most. And she had just been hit with an energy absorption ray that slammed her into a wall and shattered her shoulder blade. Yeah. So she needed to be healed.
Nice.
So suddenly she is this. She was an influencer who's like has that yoga body, like very stereotypical. Mm-hmm. The bullshit, who always wants to be the center of attention. And all of a sudden she's like, she's always very picky about what she eats. She's very conscientious. And like, she's like, I'm really hungry for some reason. Are you eating that? And she like eating an entire pizza. Oh, and then she's like, can we stop and get sushi on the way home? Like, I am starving. Like, I don't know why. It's because she's burning so many calories. Her body's constantly regenerating.
That was the first thing that I thought of.
So there's consequences to all these actions. But then now she knows she can just go buy for like $300,000 to $500,000, which for her is nothing because she's an influencer.
Dang.
Why not? Eventually it will catch up to her, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I could just get more powers. I could just become stronger. If I prove that I'm stronger, then
power hungry.
Yeah. Like, it's the same concept.
I want you to play like a small, like a tiny individual, like mushroom person that is just like curious. What can be a little bit cat-like, and their entire purpose is just to like help people find the mushroom that speaks to their soul. Like, I need something that has nothing to do with power grab, yeah, power gain. Like, yeah, what would be the most opposite? Like an ace small mushroom.
I have played for one shots. I've played characters that aren't power hungry. Like, I played super nervous scientist, or yes. I played my favorite character that I played that was for a one shot was the daughter of a preacher in a Deadlands game. Ooh. Who was oblivious to the world around her. She was a doubting Tom, so she did not believe in supernatural whatsoever. And she's just like, she goes with this team and they find zombies. So she is a huckster. And for history, for people who don't know what Deadlands is, a huckster uses the devil's magic and cards to succeed in life, except she thinks it comes from God, not the devil, no matter what anybody tells her.
Oh, this is great. Okay.
So she is powerful, but she's not power hungry. So like, she gets to this town in or this area where there's these zombies, and she's like, they're like, oh, they're undead. They're zombies. Like, oh, that's just rude. You should not call people that. They are just sick right now. We can just heal them a little bit. We can pray to God, and God will help them. And I think bringing them all back to the town to have the local healer see them, I think that would be beneficial, wouldn't it?
Just round up the zombies.
Right. Like, she doesn't think they're zombies. She's like, they're just sick people.
Okay, that is a delightful character.
My favorite part was she could go down a darker path. Because she was the only magic person there. So they hand her the black book that belonged to the person who created the zombies. And she's reading through it. And she's like, I don't know, this is a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but I guess right here it says if they just want it, we want them to sleep, right? We want just to rest. Okay. If everybody must rest internally, well, you know what I mean. You rest a little bit. And she's like reading through it and like telling them to her. She thinks she's just telling them to go to sleep for a little bit, and it's actually like dispelling the zombie. Dead.
Yeah,
it's like go back to death.
Oh, that's so good.
And then someone took the book from her because they're like, "You don't need this."
Mm-hmm.
She's like, "Well, that's uncalled for. I was really looking forward to reading through that book and seeing what kind of stuff God had to show for me."
Except yeah, God had a hand in writing that. Totally.
Of course he did. God has a hand in everything in this one. That episode ended, and if we ever played a second part, that episode ended with her waking up from a dream, remembering every page of that book. Ooh. And writing it down.
Another copy.
And the DM's like, and it's really weird. The black ink that you use seemed to have bled through and like changed the brown leather of your book to black. Never seen it happen before, but it must be what happened.
Just a chemical reaction. No big deal.
It was real weird. But now you have a black book when a complete entire set of that exact copy of the book someone got rid of and destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Nothing can go wrong. That's so perfect.
It's fine. It'll be fine. I've also played an opera singer who was like, I had a little bit of character lead in this one, but it was like their mother was super big on, way more than my mom was, but like really big on, you need to practice. This is your main thing. Like, don't go do other things, like practice, 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 practice.
Okay.
So she was a super shy, super like, I don't know. I don't want to disappoint my mom. I don't want to actually do anything. And if I do that, it's like, are we going to get in trouble? I mean, I really don't want to. If my mom finds out we're here, she's going to kill me. But then when she got on stage to do like the performance that she wanted to play, she had a blast and like blossomed out of her comfort zone and like sang whatever they were singing. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it was an opera. And like the entire time she was just like very shy and timid and like quiet.
Again, so very different than any character I've seen you play or just I've heard you spoken about thus far.
I'm an omen for the cyberpunk game we're recording right now. It's just fucking Paladin, but in a cyberpunk world.
I believe it. Maybe a little bit more gay, maybe a little bit less gay. Who knows? Depends on the setting.
They are actually bi, and
best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds. And also another trope I found out that I have is that most of my characters' partners have bad things happen to them. Even when it's not my fault.
Something that you inject into it. Like, it's not like the GM.
Sometimes it's the GM. It's just, it's not me all the time.
Okay.
Like, sometimes backstory, yes. But, like, a lot of times, like, Orle, for example, she did not exist. She did not exist until that scene.
Okay.
Huh. Like, Orle came in as a character as, like, for a blind date.
Yeah,
but the actual romantic part of that did not exist. She was added because Mitch knows I like romance.
That's so cute. Okay, I just thought that was like a GM call entirely, like it was independent of you, or it was a part of your backstory.
It was not a part of my backstory whatsoever. It was literally Mitch messaged me that day. Would you prefer a familial romance or a romantic or familial love or romantic love? And I said, obviously romantic.
Mm-hmm. No, that's your vibe. I'm always an anti-romance. I just want to be like a gross flirt, and if I can't do that, I don't want any romance at all. And I don't know how to change that. I've played and run so many sessions of Thirsty Sword Lesbians, and I just, there's no romance for me. I just want to like hold hands with like a lettuce monster and walk into the sunset. Like that's where my romance is.
I have played games where it was literally that's what it ended with, was holding hands, and it was fine.
That's really my vibe a lot of the time. I just want to be like, just say something like really silly, like, hey girl, like, those pants make your butt look great. That's like as gross as I can get. Been my favorite.
I like having romance just because, like, it's fun to play off of. I'm poly in real life.
And well, I was just going to say that. And like, obviously, romance is something that is meaningful to you, like in real life and in table.
Also, romance is terrifying to me in real life. So in games, it's like a safety place that I can explore it without. Yeah.
What does it all come back to?
Yep. It all comes back to.
Might be a pretty good way if we want to wrap it up a little bit. Kind of, you know, it all comes back to how tabletop games are. It's just a method for us to express ourselves, and I really think that it's important that you can share a table with a variety of people, because if you're only telling stories of people that look like you and have the same gender and sexuality, then the stories are going to be pretty monotonous. You're never going to get any variety. You're never going to learn, and like your bleed is going to get boring. Make your tables diverse, safe, inclusive, and then set up expectations, and then bleed all you want. Just make it safe and make sure everybody is okay.
And also make sure that you're not breaking anybody else's lines and veils by doing so.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than having your immersion broken because someone brings up something that's a huge phobia for you in the middle of a game. It's great. It's wonderful.
I did that as a GM once last year, and it was one of the worst moments. See, I can't even say that. That's not even fair. It wasn't my worst moment. It was the other person's, because it was our finale. I didn't reread our lines and veils. And like, I was running like 8 games at the time. Again, I have no excuses for what I did, but they didn't say anything in the moment. And then after the game was done, you know, we talked about it, we debriefed. And then she sent me a message and was like, hey, remember those lines and veils that we've done? And we talked about every single game except this one. So something came in. It was so hard for me in that moment. I typed out 3 times being like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't read it. Or, you know what? That's my bad. I should have known better. And then I erased all of it and just wrote, I fucked up. I'm sorry. I'm going to take responsibility for this. If there's anything I can do for you, let me know. Because nothing else I say will change the fact that I hurt somebody by not respecting the line that we had set.
Yeah, I did it once that I'm aware of. And it was because I brought up rats, but not thinking about it, because I knew that, like, in the lines and fails, there were rats, but my brain was thinking more of, like, monstrous rats. Yeah. And I was explaining a hoarder's house. So my brain just instinctually was like, yeah, you see rat droppings and you see, like, a rat scurrying behind, like, a thing. Like, because that's what my brain pictures in a
hoarder's house. Yeah.
Like, my brain just completely disconnected for a second. And then the second I saw the look on my one friend's face, I'm like, shit, I am so sorry. Aww. Like, I completely forgot. And, like, thankfully, they're like, it's okay. It's not as bad anymore. But going forward, I was like, that's fine. Mine is dolls. And that has popped up, like, surprisingly more than it should have. but with the same person every time as well. Oh, like, yuck. They just keep forgetting. And I just, like, message them, like, hey, you're going down a line. You're about to hit a point.
That shouldn't be on you to have to remind them every time, you know? The reason we talk about that is so the person facilitating can make sure. Yeah, you know this. I'm not going to repeat it. So I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. And the last time it was, like, literally a full-blown doll. And they started describing it, and Darby, thankfully, had stepped up and said, nope, at red X, like, before good. I could even say it, because, like, I already started in panic mode.
Yep. And like, I'm sorry the one that happened. Like, that's icky. Yeah.
Like, the one time that I accidentally triggered myself, and it was because I didn't know it was a trigger, was, like, the situation. So I told you about Shadowrun, where the character's wife almost ran into traffic because she was forced, she was possessed. And that, at the time, was not a trigger for me. So later, a couple episodes later, about 2-3 weeks pass, and in that time frame, something had happened in my life that made it a trigger, and I didn't think about it, didn't realize it was a trigger. Mm-hmm. So my character is explaining to another character the shit that's happened in the last, like, 24 hours, and just casually says, oh yeah, my wife was possessed and then she went to go turn into traffic and I had to save her. And, like, I immediately felt the panic hit me.
Yep.
And then I finished my sentence and I typed up, I need 2 minutes. I turned my camera off and I stepped away to just, like, calm down. And then at my break, I said, hey, we cannot bring this up anymore. This is a new line. I cannot have this bring up. I did not realize this would trigger me, but I have a new line. And everybody's like, okay, 100%. And, like, that topic did not come up again for the rest of the campaign.
That's beautiful, as it should be. Because that, like, that lines, fails, X card, that is, like, a forever ongoing thing. You know, it's not like you write out, I don't like mustard. And that is static, you know. Maybe something will change. Maybe I find out that, like, you know what, I don't like honey mustard. I just don't want to have that talked about or brought up. But if you want to talk about, I don't know, mustard varieties, grain mustard, go for it, because I have now learned within myself that that is acceptable. Or, like, you know, you should be able to add lines and veils as you go, because life is a constantly changing process and we are forever evolving, and y'all, it's hard as shit.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, it is a more specific thing. So, like, suicide to me isn't a huge trigger, but particular topics of suicide are.
Yep. Yep.
Words are hard. I knew there was a player I played with who drinking wasn't a trigger, but specifically older woman getting drunk on New Year's was a trigger.
Okay.
Because of their mom getting drunk on New Year's and it always ending very poorly.
Yeah.
Which was a very good thing to know, because we were playing a New Year's Eve celebration where some of the rules were, hey, drink your weight in booze.
Oh my God.
As little old ladies. And I'm like, yeah, that's important to know. We're going to X that one off of the options.
No, and that's, and the thing is about that, and I guarantee it probably didn't make the game that much, like, it wasn't difficult for you running it to change it, you know, just because of one thing that we have to work around. Like, it's never an issue. And some people feel like, oh, you know, if we can't, like, I'm afraid of spiders, but I don't want to ruin the game if we can't have spiders. Like, we don't ever need spiders. Like, there's so many other things that can be replaced, reused, introduced.
I think the exceptions are like if the game is like, there's a book that someone's working on and it's about porcelain dolls. Like it's literally about dolls that come to life.
Oh, yuck. Okay.
I will never play that game.
Yeah.
Because not your vibe at all. There is no way I could play that and then be like, hey, I'm afraid of dolls. You can't play with any of the doll aspect of this. Like, that's not fair to the game. Same thing would be if someone's running a full drow campaign and have the Lilith there, the spider goddess, and it's like a main portion of your campaign, but you go into it knowing like, hey, this is the premise. This is what we're doing. Someone with spider phobia probably shouldn't sign up for that game.
Yes. It's both ways kind of a thing too. Like if you have a fear of the unknown or like the bottomless void, don't play Call of Cthulhu. Know your lane and, you know, and drive within it. Yeah, I think that summarizes kind of all my fun little tidbits to share.
So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the interwebs?
Heck yeah. Well, if y'all are interested in following me, I exist on basically every social media platform. There's far too many now, but on Twitter, I am, you know, at @B_Zelda. Instagram, @B_Zelda_. And then literally everything else from like TikTok to Hive, Mastodon, it's just @B_Zelda. Easy peasy. I'm your non-binary busy bee, and this has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Check all the links in the description down below and go follow Bee and check out all the wonderful things that they make because they are a fantastic role player and will add a lot to your story. And also invite them and pay them to do stuff.
Yeah, that'd be great. I will never say, well, I mean, I might, but like I often don't say no. So don't be afraid to ask. My DMs are open. I got my email on something. You can find it somewhere.
Find it somewhere on the internet.
Don't look too hard though.
If you want to find me, you can find me at @BeholderToNoOne on Twitter or wherever social media platforms exist. I might not be active on some of those, but they exist, so you can go look. You can find me on Tuesdays on 2000 Tales Role Playing in a Masks game at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, playing Showstopper, the star who is a center of attention, who was brought up in this episode. And you can also find me on Fridays. This month, we are playing currently a Cyberpunk Red game on 2000 Tales Role Playing with Taylor from High Shelf Collective running the game. And super excited for that. So this will be the second episode this week. So you just missed the first episode. So go watch the first episode so you can watch the second episode live this week because it's going to be a blast. And that's all I got right now. So that's it for me. But keep being awesome. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to let you know that this episode was edited by Matt over at Walsh Animation. They are part of the Table Party podcast, and I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to them, especially because Matt has been such a freaking lifesaver when it comes to editing the discussion episodes recently. So please listen to this ad for Table Party podcast and go check them out and make sure you give them some love. Thanks.
What makes Table Party different from other tabletop podcasts?
The music.
The setting.
The characters.
The gore.
A bunch of different games.
The refreshing coldness of ice cream.
The 300-foot-tall squid named Delilah.
The dice rolls.
The horrifying body horror.
The aroma.
The suffering of my players.
Dairy Queen blizzards.
The luxurious plush texture.
The free coupons.
Bad decisions.
And who can we expect?
I'm Kelsey.
I'm Matt.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Walsh.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to the table party.
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 Welcome to the table party.